Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for coming today. My name is Michael Shires. I am the Collection Development Librarian here at the University of Regina Library. This is the third session of the Libraries Beyond the Book Lecture Series for 2012-2013. This lecture is titled Furry and Feathered Bats, Myths, Mysteries, and Mushrooms. And it'll last between 45 minutes and an hour. And afterwards, it will be a question and answer session. Today's speaker is Dr. Mark Brigham. He is a professor of biology, and he joined the faculty at the University of Regina in 1990. He's been head of the Department of Biology since 2006. He earned his PhD at York University in Toronto and did a postdoctoral fellowship at the University of Calgary. Dr. Brigham's research focuses on the behavior and ecology of bats and nightjars, which are also called goat suckers. They're nocturnal, insect-eating birds that are related to owls. Dr. Brigham has authored and co-authored over 140 articles in peer-reviewed journals. Dr. Brigham believes that bats provide the perfect vehicle for talks like this, as bats are often misunderstood by people. Bats can be used to make a case for why apparently esoteric research can have an important impact. Dr. Brigham is a strong proponent of bringing science and research to the public. So we're grateful that he's able to do this spectacular presentation today. So please welcome Dr. Mark Brigham.
Thank you, Michael. I guess I should put this on for at least a minute because I didn't bring it. But then it gets hot and I can't see, so I'm going to take it off. I hate Halloween because my favorite critters take a beating on Halloween. And therefore, it seems highly appropriate that I'm going to come and talk today. My goal is to entertain, to have some fun, and hopefully at the same time pass along some information. I fully intend that these two aspiring students, who we want tuition from in about 14, 15 years, will get a great deal out of it. I always think that if you can reach that age, it's easy to reach everyone else. But if you have a question during, don't hesitate to put your hand up or shout out or something like that. I don't mind, this is informal. My name is not Dr. Brigham as well, I'm just Mark Brigham. And the doctor is just something I happen to accumulate along the way. This is the nicest thing you can do for me when we're done, and that's for you two in the front, is that I sometimes get these letters from students because I do lots of these talks in schools, and it is great fun. Okay. So, I refuse to dress up as Batman because he has made my life hell for 30-odd years. The point that I really want to get across today for the most of the talk is that virtually everything you think you know about bats is indeed wrong. Okay. It's amazing how much young people know that's correct compared to older folks. I like to say that my introduction to the natural world and one reason why I got into this business came about through one of the most scary incidents in my life, through my grandmother, who was a delightful woman. I can still picture her very, very clearly standing on a stool in the middle of a kitchen. I was about 6 years old, and she was standing with her skirts drawn above her head with a mouse running through the kitchen. And she was terrified that this mouse was going to run up her skirts. And as you can imagine, a six-year-old seeing a 70-year-old woman with her skirt up above her head was quite the thing. The only other thing in life she was afraid of was bats flying in her hair. And it seemed to me that why would these animals want to do those things? And in fact, they are myths. They're not true. So she had defended her family from a bear with no trouble, but a mouse scared the daylights out of her. So, bats are the only flying mammals. Okay? Mammals are a group of animals that all have fur, and they all feed their young offspring milk. Until about 10 years ago, I would have said that only female mammals feed their offspring milk. But in fact, we discovered a bat about 10 years ago, not me personally, but some of my colleagues in Indonesia, where males have functional mammary glands and appear to feed offspring. We have put a lid on that information so that it doesn't get out because we male humans don't want anything to do with that whatsoever. Okay? Most bats are quite small. They all have wings. They're the only mammals that can fly. Now,
In terms of mammals, they're probably one of the best known vertebrate animals that there are, so birds and fish and lizards and all those sorts of things, but there's actually not very many of them. There's only a hair over 4,000 different kinds of mammals. So when you think of the seals and the whales and the dogs and the cats and the armadillos and all those sorts of things, there's only over a little over 4,000. In fact, more than 1,200 of them are bats. So one in every four mammal is a bat. Two of every four is a mouse or a rat or a muskrat or something like that. So the vast majority of the big, furry, charismatic mammals actually make up a very, very small proportion of the entire group. So, a perfectly good mammal. The only place you find hair in an elephant is on the very end of its tail, but it feeds its young milk and is the biggest of all mammals, something everyone knows and apparently thinks they know quite a bit about. Anyway. So, here is the impression most people have of bats. So this is a poster that I actually have in my office, and it's advertising these fancy cowboy boots. And what I want to show you is to talk about the stereotypes here, but also to show you why, as young people especially, you can never ever trust what you read and what people are trying to sell you. You always have to be careful, okay? Now, first of all, notice that it is the young lady in the picture that has fallen down the hole that has to be rescued by the gentleman in the fancy cowboy boots. Most people in the room would recognize it would be the other way around, right? It would be the gentleman in the cowboy boots that would fall down the hole, and the poor young lady would have to rescue him. Secondly, I want you to notice that he's grabbing her, hauling her out of the hole, by her left hand. No question about that, right? So if that's her left hand, then she has to be reaching around to grab the toe of his boot with her right hand. And if she did that, her thumb would be right there. So he's rescuing a woman with two left hands. Okay? So not only is she stupid for falling in the hole, but she's also freaky as well. Okay? So, problems with the poster. The other problem with the poster is the bats in the picture. Of course, they're portrayed to look scary, to look intimidating, to look big, and you have to have these fancy cowboy boots in order to ward off the bats. Now, the person who drew the poster, I actually know the artist and have made great fun of him for doing this, used that bat as the model for the bat in the poster. Okay? It's called the Western small-footed bat. You can see by the size of my hand, it's not very big. And the question I always get is, well, it's just a baby, right? No, that's an adult. It's an adult female that's actually pregnant in this picture. Okay? Now, to give you an idea of how small that really is, think of a loony. A loony weighs 7 grams. Okay? That bat weighs 4 grams. That's less than the mass of a nickel. Okay? It will never get any bigger than that. And in fact, the vast majority of the world's bats are small. If you had 7 loonies in your hand, 49 grams, that would represent more than half of the world species in terms of body mass. So most bats are small. The myth is that they're big, they're going to carry off children and take them to some cave somewhere and eat them. They can't do that. The biggest bat in the world is a flying fox, and you'll meet some flying foxes, that lives in the South Pacific, and it weighs about 1.5 kilos. That's 1,500 grams, which you think, oh, monster. Well, it's pretty big. When you spread its wingspan is about the same as mine or a little bigger. But 1.5 kilos is about one-third the size of the average family house cat. So the biggest bat in the world is way smaller than a house cat. Now, the other thing to note in this, if I go previous, here, that we'll have to speak about is the fact that the bats are flying with their mouths open, teeth flashing, which makes them look scary, okay? So I will address that in a few moments, but keep that in mind as well. You always see bats with their mouths open, and they're always made to look big. I kind of think bats are a good thing because they're associated with this product. Now, you two guys in the front aren't supposed to know anything about this, but the world's first picture trademark for any product is the Bacardi Company for rum, 1862. Mr. Bacardi did a fine job making rum in Puerto Rico, but Mrs. Bacardi realized that on that island, very few people could read
They couldn't read the word Bacardi, and she realized she wanted them to buy Bacardi rum, not somebody else's rum, and they couldn't read the words. So she said, we need a picture so they can identify our rum. Looked up into the rafters of the distillery, there were bats there, and for 150 years now, there have been bats on Bacardi rum bottles. Now, it's not a commercial for Bacardi rum, but just to say, you don't associate bats with rum. If you go to Australia and buy their rum, it's got polar bears on it, which makes no sense whatsoever. But in this part of the world, you can buy rum with bats, and I'm a hockey fan, so I happen to know that the Leafs sell rum because they're such a horrible team that you have to be drunk in order to watch them. All right, now, have you guys taken French yet in school? Yes? Do you know the word for bat in French? Very good. Now, you're never supposed to do this, but if you directly translate that word into English, do you know what it means? It does mean bat, but it actually translates into something else.
Some kind of mouse?
Right, flying mouse or wild mouse. If you spoke German, you'd call my animals Fledermaus, flying mice. If you spoke Dutch or Afrikaans, you'd use a similar word. So many people think that bats are nothing more than flying mice. Wrong. Okay? Mice are rodents. Bats are bats. Very, very different critters. And in fact, bats are more closely related amongst mammals to primates than they are to rodents. Does anyone here know a primate? I know a primate. She's sitting right there. Monkeys, apes, lemurs, all those things are primates. Okay? Us. We're a primate. So bats are more closely related to us than mice. This looks like a mouse. It's got white fur, pink skin, pink eyes. In fact, this is a bat that I caught in Moose Mountain Provincial Park about 15 years ago. It's a female that's pregnant, and it was born without any color in its skin. We call that an albino. So it's not the way they normally look. This usually looks the same color as the very first bat I showed you, chocolate brown in color, but no color whatsoever, and looks like a flying mouse, but it still isn't a flying mouse. Okay? This is the same species, hibernating in an old mine near Ottawa, Ontario. And this points out one of the clear differences between mice or rodents and bats. Okay? So, I took this picture in 1987, a long time ago. The bat with the silver bracelet on. That silver bracelet was put on that bat when it was an adult by my PhD supervisor in 1966, making that animal in the picture at least 21 years old. These are called little brown bats, and they weigh one loonie, 7 grams. Okay? We know in the wild little brown bats can live upwards of 30 years in some cases. The two with orange bracelets were both 12 years old when I took the picture. Now, yes, I took a picture of this specific cluster to illustrate this, but those animals have been out in the wild, living and doing their thing for over a decade in the orange case and over 2 decades here. In the wild, mother mouse, very lucky to live to be 1 year old. Very rarely live longer than that. Okay, so rodents live fast, die young. Bats live slow, die old, like primates. Okay? So they have many things in common with us. What do you think she's afraid of?
Bats.
Yes, where? Yes.
I think she's afraid of bats.
Where are they going to fly? Where do you think she...
Hair.
In her hair, right. Ladies, this one's on you. This is not our fault, okay? My grandmother is terrified of bats flying in her close-cropped, slightly curly hair. Of course, that's what this person is terrified of as well, and it's wrong. Why would an animal want to end up in your hair? What good would that do, right? So, well, they build nests. No, birds build nests. Bats are totally different, way different than birds. They're not related to birds except being vertebrates. So they don't build nests, no. We don't have a good idea where this myth comes from, except I could tell you that I could take a bat and find the curliest hair in the audience, probably over here, take the bat, put it in the hair, and the bat would not get tangled, would not stay there, and you'd have bat flying screaming in one direction and young lady flying screaming in the other direction. Okay? Here's why I think the myth got started. It's only what I think, not that I know. In the summertime, Bats are out flying looking for food. Where do the mosquitoes and other insects fly that make us very annoyed? Right here. Okay? We don't like that. They fly here because we're losing huge amounts of heat from the top of our head. When you guys go out, I notice you've got hats, scarves to keep your head warm because you know that we lose 70% of our body heat to the top of our head. Very, very poorly insulated. If you want to stay warm, you keep your head warm and your feet warm where we lose lots of heat as well. We don't care if bugs fly around our feet because they're in shoes. Around our head, we don't like it. What do bats eat? Bugs. They're flying around your head to eat the bugs. They couldn't care less about your hair. You're McDonald's on wheels, okay? So don't worry about bats flying in your hair. I have only ever seen it happen once. It happened to me. I was in a hole in the ground in South Africa about this big around, and there was 250,000 bats coming the other way, okay? Then it's kind of hard not to get them in your hair. It's not just bats that hang upside down. Any primate can hang upside down. No problem at all. All you need is the right size fence and his mother grocery shopping. That's all that you need for this to happen. Now, I would point out, A, that he's got a smile on his face, okay? And I would also point out, quite happily, B, that he now has a degree from this institution. So there was no long-term damage. But why would you hang upside down? I mean, we don't do it. Or maybe you could, do you guys go home and hang upside down when you go home? No? We don't do it very well. Any bat can hang upside down by one toenail quite easily, no big deal. And again, there's no right answer to why they do it. My best guess is their wings, which are their forelimbs, are incredibly important. And you wouldn't want to use them because if you rip one or tear one or break one, you can't fly, you can't find food, you're going to die. Hind limbs for most bats, not all that important. So let's hang from what's not all that important, and therefore they hang. And their hind limbs aren't particularly strong, they're not really good runners, etc., etc. So that means they go upside down. They've got lots of structures that makes them quite able to do this. But anyone can, no big deal. Next myth. Who's been told in their life that they're blind as a bat? Anyone ever heard that? You're Derek. You are as blind as a bat. I used to get told this all the time by my dear sweet mother. And now I say, yes, you did this horrible thing to me. I show this picture to ask you, what are the two, or what's the main sense that both of these animals use? Right? Everyone would say eyes. Of course, great big eyes, great big eyes. Again, pictures can be deceiving. For owls, like this saw-whet owl, yes, it's got big eyes, but its most important sense is actually hearing. It can listen to a mouse walking on the forest floor and accurately aim a strike with its talons at that mouse using hearing alone. In the darkest of nights, its eyes do a reasonable job of picking out big obstacles, but it really flies by memory more than anything. Okay? So its eyes are important, but not all that important. In contrast, this guy is a flying fox from southern Africa, weighs about 100 grams, so that's the size of a Richardson's ground squirrel in Saskatchewan, and I would tell you that its eyes are better than the owl's, and it flies around in the darkest of nights using vision alone, and then it uses smell in that very big nose to detect ripe fruit, and that's how it finds what it eats. And everyone says, yeah, but bats have that weird sense, like that sonar thing. Not this one. So of the world's 1,200 bats, only about 750 or so can use the special sense, and we'll get to it in a second. So, flying fox, because it looks like a dog. It's got a dog-like face, great big molars. These ones are restricted to the old world, so Africa, Asia, Australia, tend to eat fruit and sometimes nectar. Okay, but their eyes are better than owls, way better than ours. They probably only see in black and white, but okay, so back to our little brown. Same guy as I've shown before, 7 grams, adult. And what I would point out to you this time, and remember the cowboy boot picture, the bat is flying through the air with its mouth open. Now, I've drawn in these lines. The bat is not threatening anything. The reason it's flying through the air with its mouth open is because, quite literally, it's screaming! It's yelling as loud as it can yell. And when I say loud, I mean loud. This bat is making noises with the same intensity as if you were standing right next to your smoke detector. about 105 to 110 decibels. Very, very loud. However, it makes sounds that we can't hear because they're high pitch. Anyone here play the piano? You play the piano. What hand do you use to play the high notes? Right hand or left hand?
Right
hand. Okay, so imagine a piano. It's as long as Taylor Field. Sorry, yes, Taylor Field, not the stadium, the field. And you're playing the piano way down there, way in the end zone down there. So high pitched that you can't hear the sounds. So, to hear the sounds, we use a machine called a bat detector, which takes sounds from the environment and turns them into sounds that we can hear, high-pitched sounds. Okay? So, nothing special. Be very interesting to know whether this machine that's doing the podcast can hear it. So, now, everyone has heard this sound. Okay? Tinkle, tinkle, tinkle. Nothing special. Now listen. There are all kinds of sounds that you can't hear that the keys make when they bang together. You only hear certain sounds because your ears don't go very high in frequency. Bats, almost all of them, a few exceptions, make sounds that your ears can't hear. So, did you ever know that bags made sounds? Of course, you didn't know I had a bat in my pocket the whole time, right? So everyone gets to shake a wing a little bit later on. Those are echolocation sounds. So what the bat is doing is screaming, listening for an echo. So if you want to know what an echo is like, everyone close your eyes and listen. I'm going to clap my hands once. Just want you to listen. So after the sound of the clap, did you hear the echoes come off the walls? So the bat screams, listens for the echo, screams, listens for the echo, screams, listens for the echo, and can do that a whole bunch of times. That's how bats find out about their environment. They have eyes. There's no such thing as a blind bat. But these guys, we honestly don't know what they use them for. Because you could blind the bat, which would be a horrible thing to do, and it would get along perfectly well. The one graph that I'll show to illustrate all about echolocation. This is a picture of a human being saying the word bat. Okay, that's what. Now, what I want you to get from this is three things. A, it would be difficult to draw. Looks complicated. B, it takes 500 milliseconds, which is 1/2 of 1 second. And C, the frequency or pitch is somewhere between 0 and about 3. Okay, you don't need to worry about the units. So 1/2 a second, complicated, and low frequency. Now look at the sounds at the top. That's from the animal that's in my pocket. Notice the sounds are simple. Anyone could draw them. Notice that all those sounds took 120 milliseconds, or about 1/10 of a second, for the bat to say. That means it could say 240 words in a second. Even my mother-in-law did not talk that fast. And notice the frequency, not 0 to 3, but 0 to 100. Okay? Humans this age, if they're lucky, can hear up to about 15 kilohertz. My hearing doesn't start till 7 because I'm older. We can't hear anything that bat says. Your cat can, your dog can, but we can't. So we call it ultrasound, beyond the range that humans can hear. So this bat is making all these incredibly intense sounds and listening for the echoes. Now what I think is even cooler is that when you scream, when I yell, it actually takes me a second or to be able to hear soft sound. So if you yell at someone and then whisper, they're really not going to hear the whisper very well. So bats have to yell and then try and hear these faint echoes. That would be hard, except they're far smarter than most things. When they yell, they decouple all the bones in their ears so that they actually just hear the sound relatively faintly going out, put everything back together so that they can hear the faint echo coming back. It could do that 200 times a second. Pretty amazing. So, of course, everyone knows bats live in caves. Anyone ever been in a cave in Saskatchewan? There aren't any. None that I've ever known. None that I've ever found. None that I'd ever want to spend the year in. Average temperature in Saskatchewan and around Regina is -1. That means cave temperature will be about -1 all year round. Be a miserable place to live. No. Most bats in our part of the world do not live in caves. In fact, none do. They use caves to hibernate sometimes in the winter, but most live in other places.
Here's a kind of a cool cave where bats live. This is near San Antonio in Texas. Every one of the little brown dots is a bat. There's somewhere between, 2 and 5 million that live in this cave. And they're all girls. The boys stay in Mexico and drink tequila all summer. The girls go to the cave, give birth to their pups, and bear and raise them in this cave. The bats are about that big from head to tail, and collectively they eat about 250 pickup trucks full of flying insects, mostly moths that eat crops every single night. It takes them 3 hours to get out of that cave every night. Another cool place where I found bats roosting, and you can get by the size of the person how big this is on Canada's Queen Charlotte Islands off the northwest coast of British Columbia. And this particular boulder field is geothermally heated by hot water. That means there's hot water bubbling out of the interior of the earth. Those rocks are mostly 35 to 40 degrees Celsius, and the bats like to live in those rocks. But some of them like to live in the rocks down here. And believe it or not, that's below high tide line. And they seem to be able to figure out the tide cycle, because they never get caught in there when the tide comes up over that log and they move to another roost. So here you've got bats that figure out, oh, there's hot rocks, nice place to live, and, but we can only live there certain days of the month when the tide doesn't drown us. Other parts of the world, bats use different things to roost. This is called a suction cup bat. You can actually see on its wrists, it's got suction cups, and it can hold onto really small leaves. These are called tent-making bats. One male in the group used his teeth, chewed all along the midrib of the leaf so that the leaf droops down, so when it rains, they've got a perfect tent. The girls decide who builds the best tent, and that's who they move in with. They don't pay any rent, but they make the boys build the tents for them. So you're walking through the forest in Costa Rica, and looking this way, you can't see the bats. Only if you walk like this, which means you tend to walk into trees, do you ever find them. So in fact, the vast majority of the world's bats live on or in trees as opposed to caves. These are flying foxes in Australia called little red flying foxes, about that big from head to tail, and they're hanging on the outside of a tree. Why flying foxes like to cover themselves in their wings, we really don't know, but they all do it, whereas our bats tend to hold their wings at their side and not do this. I think they get horrible sunburns in the Australian sun, but they don't seem to. So my students and I for about 20 years have been working in the Cypress Hills, and this is where bats live in the Cypress Hills, in big aspen trees. And I don't know if I can, that little hole right there is made by a sucker, which is related to a woodpecker, and if you stick a camera in that hole and look up, there's all the big brown bats living inside that cavity. Almost all aspen trees are hollow inside. Okay, oops. No, let's do this previous, sorry, I get carried away. So, most of the world's bats eat nothing but flying insects, okay? So, they probably don't eat too many mosquitoes because mosquitoes only fly when there's a big target around, but they'll eat just about anything else they can catch. So here's a little brown eating a moth. Here's a pallid bat eating an insect called a katydid, which is related to a grasshopper. And I would tell you they eat huge amounts of insects. So notice the size of the person. This is a pile of bat guano, bat poop. This is what's left over. The animals that created that pile are that big. Okay? There's hundreds of them on the roof of this cave in the tropics above them. But that means they eat a heck of a lot of bugs. If I was to eat as much in a day as a little brown bat that weighs 7 grams, I would walk into McDonald's and I would say, I would like 800 quarter pounders to go, please. And I'd eat them all. And then I'd probably go back and have a little bit more at supper. Okay? So a female little brown bat eats her own weight in flying insects every day. And if she happens to be feeding an offspring, lactating, producing milk, she'll eat 1.5 times her own weight every single day. Imagine trying to feed those two if they ate their own weight and a half every day. They'd be on their street right quick. In other parts of the world, bats do eat different things, but not in Canada, not in temperate areas, only tropical areas. So this is a fish-catching bat, lives in Mexico, Costa Rica, places like that. And we know a lot about this bat because the U.S. Navy was convinced that this bat was using echolocation to detect fish underwater.
And they thought, if we can learn how to do this, we can detect submarines underwater, and this would be a really good thing to know. But of course, the U.S. Navy forgot the simple memory of when you're a kid in the swimming pool or the lake and your mother calls you for lunch, what do? You dive underwater, and then you can't hear her yelling at you because the sound bounces off the water. It doesn't go into the water. The bat doesn't detect the fish under the water using echolocation. It's far smarter than that. It detects the ripples that the little fish makes when it touches the water from underneath. And then using its onboard brain computer, it works out based on the spreading ripple where the fish was when it touched the water, which direction it was going, how fast it was swimming, and when it's over top with those long hind claws, gasps the fish out of the water. The U.S. Navy learned a lot about the bat, but they didn't learn anything about how to detect submarines. It's called a slit-faced bat, lives in southern Africa, and it's very cultured because it eats frog's legs. That's a frog's leg right there. So the animal's face is here. And the reason, it should also say it only eats boy frog's legs, probably not because they taste better, because it's boys that go ribbit, ribbit, ribbit. Boys do that to get girlfriends. You'll learn about this 5-6 years. You'll croak all over the place. Do anything to get a girlfriend, okay? That's what frogs do, anything to get a girlfriend. Well, they either get a girlfriend or they get eaten by the slit-faced bat. So kind of tough for boy frogs. There's a cool children's book series called Silver Wing. I don't know if anyone has ever heard of it, but in the book, there's a villain bat. His name is Goth, and this is him. I don't even know what the real common name of this animal is. Most people who study mammals only use scientific names because the common names are not well defined. So his scientific name is Vampyrum spectrum. He is about that big from head to tail, and he is carnivorous. He eats other bats. So this guy catches little bats on the wing and then crunches his way through them. Why he's got that great big nose, we have no idea. So, and also in the tropics, there are bats that eat fruit. So these are fruit-eating bats in Costa Rica. That's not a fruit, actually, that the bat's carrying. That's the bat's tongue. Bats have exceedingly long tongues. A bat was recently discovered with a tongue wrapped up in the back of its throat that stretched about 1.5 times as long as its body. So if I had a tongue that long, that means I could stand about here and lick your face. Okay? Not sure that I'd want to do that, but I could. So fruit-eating bats. And then there are nectar-feeding bats. So this is in Arizona. Famous saguaro cactus, that's the one on the Arizona license plates that looks like this, can get very tall. Saguaro flowers only open at night, and they're great big things. Nothing would crawl up the cactus to get at that flower. The only thing that get to it, Sanborn's long-nosed bat. What does it do? Sticks its head in the flower, doesn't stop flying, that wouldn't be healthy. And then inside, the bat is using its long tongue to lick up the nectar that the flower is producing. So it's no different than a butterfly or a moth or a honeybee. Same thing, the plant benefits because pollen gets plastered in the bat's fur and some of that pollen goes on the stigma, and that's how the cactus makes seeds. So no bat, no seeds, no cactus. Until recently in Arizona, the cactus was in national parks and protected. The bat was considered a pest and you could shoot it on sight. Doesn't make any sense. And the most famous bat of all, especially today. Okay? So I'm dressed up as what everyone calls Dracula. Dracula was a real person. His name was Vlad the Impaler, or Count Dracul. He was a nasty piece of work. Lived about 600 or 700 years ago in what is Transylvania, part of Romania. Nothing whatsoever to do with bats. He killed a lot of people in nasty ways. Yuck, yuck, yuck. Interestingly, part of the legend, at the same time a number of people suffered from a disease called porphyria, which is mostly iron deficiency. And those people that suffered from that disease needed iron. They worked out, quite brightly, what one of the best ways to get iron when there's no Flintstone chewable vitamins is to drink blood, because it's full of iron. So they would drink blood. Part of the disease symptoms, their gums would shrink, making their teeth and their fangs look long. And they got horrible sunburns when they went out in the daytime because of the sensitivity of their skin, so they all went out at night. That is married with Vlad the Impaler, horrible person, is where Dracula comes from. A subset of those folks actually grew hair in the palms of their hands. Werewolves, that's where that comes from.
So it was people who were ill happened to live at a time when there was this nasty human running around. Bats didn't come into the equation until Bram Stoker wrote the book Dracula, and he put them in for effect. That's all. But there is a real vampire bat discovered by a biologist by the name of Charles Darwin, most famous biologist of all time. Found them in 1830s during his trip on the Beagle to South America. They only live in South America, not Europe, nowhere else in the world. There are three species of vampires. Only one of them is common, and this is the common one. It's called a common vampire. It looks like a little pig to me. It's got a little sort of snout-like nose. Everything you think you know about vampires is wrong. They do not suck blood. They use razor-sharp front, upper, and lower teeth. They're as sharp as a piece of broken glass. They make a slit in the skin of a sleeping animal, and they lick up the blood. The bat itself is only about that big, about 40 grams. Takes about a teaspoon of blood at a feeding. Okay, so they don't take very much. They don't like human blood, because our blood is too salty for their tastes. Horse blood, chicken blood, cow blood. Now guess what? 500 years ago in South America, there were no chickens, there were no horses, there were no cows. So these things were very uncommon. We've put all those animals there, and the population has exploded because there's all this food for them to have. Okay? So they're a bit of a problem. But they can bite a horse, and the horse never even wakes up when this animal's taking blood from it. Two other things to be said is that if you make a slit in the skin of a sleeping animal, normally what happens to blood is it dries up quickly, it clots, and it doesn't keep flowing. Well, that's bad news to a vampire bat. It would have to make another hole. So in its saliva, there's actually an anticoagulant that prevents the blood from clotting, so it keeps flowing. And in Saskatchewan, you can get a drug called Draculin for high blood pressure and heart problems that's based on that saliva. So we know something about bat spit, and we've turned it into a drug. That means the animal has helped us, as far as I'm concerned. And the final cool thing about vampire bats that everyone needs to know is that they don't get a blood meal every 2 days. They starve to death. Okay? So they can miss 2 nights. And if they don't get something on the third, they will die of starvation. When they go back to the colony after missing a couple of nights feeding, they basically beg for food from the other individuals that live in the tree with them, many of whom are non-relatives. And there is food sharing that goes on between vampire bats. A vampire bat that's had a meal will regurgitate blood to other bats that haven't had a meal. So they share food with non-relatives. And something that we call reciprocal altruism is probably going on. That is, you help me now, I'll help you later. Okay? So, this part of the world, bats don't have any insects to eat in the winter. They have to hibernate for the winter. And this is called a greater horseshoe bat in England, which actually echolocates through its nose and through it, rather than through its mouth. That looks like a sausage roll because it's going to spend 7 or 8 months without eating. So here's a perfectly happy hibernating bat. And when something hibernates, everything in it slows down. So when it's flying, its heart rate is 1,200 beats per minute. When it's hibernating, it's 12 beats per minute. When it's flying, its body temperature is 37.5 degrees, just like yours. When it's hibernating, its body temperature is about 3 degrees. When it's flying, it probably breathes about 100 times a minute. When it's hibernating, it probably breathes once every hour and a half. Okay? Everything slows down, lives all winter on some stored fat. Mating, bat sex. Let me just say, males are very well endowed. It's very easy to tell males from females. If human males were equally well endowed, our reproductive organs would be about 2.5 feet long. Okay? So, in some instances, females have twins, but they have twins about as often as human females have twins. So this has two fetuses inside. Usually they give birth to a single offspring, and they are huge. So do either of you guys know how much you weighed when you were born? No? 7 pounds, something like that? 8 pounds maybe if you were big? If you were a bat, you'd have weighed 35 pounds when you were born, and that makes your mother's eyes just go glossy. However, you grow up, be full size in 3 weeks. You go to university in 5 to 6 weeks and be on your own. So there would be advantages. Okay? Usually have one. Now this puts in perspective how big bat babies are. a schematic of the birth canal of the bats that lived in the cave near San Antonio. So females normally have a birth canal that's about 2 millimeters in diameter. Right after they give birth, it's 17 times larger. Okay? Imagine the stretching that has to go on to get out one of these huge babies. All right, the talk was entitled Myths, Mushrooms, and something else. I forget. The mushroom part. This has to do with something that's doing very bad things to bats. In eastern North America, in hibernation sites, we now see little brown bats that look like this. They've got white noses. So it's called white nose syndrome, and it's killing about 95% of the bats that hibernate. Okay? It was discovered only in 2006. What happens is they wake up during the middle of hibernation, they're trying to find something to eat, they go out of the cave, and they freeze to death and die. So you're looking at an animal that lives for 20 or 30 years, gives birth to a single offspring every year, and when you have 95% die, you know the population has to be plummeting, absolutely plummeting. Okay? It's caused by a fungus related to a mushroom that is in the soil in all sorts of places, relatives up there are. We think this particular species was imported purely by accident from Europe. It also causes wing damage to these bats, and basically their wings rot during the winter time. It's found all through the western United States and now in 4 provinces in Canada, killing things with large amounts in as it moves through. My guess is that if it's not in Manitoba this winter, it will be in Manitoba next winter. So it's coming our way and killing lots of bats. Here's what we have to explain. Here's what it does. When a bat hibernates, this is a trace of its body temperature. It spends long periods of time with low body temperature. It doesn't change at all. The bat's deeply hibernating. But all animals that hibernate, once in a while, they arouse. We're not sure why they do this, whether it's to get up to urinate, whether it's to get up to defecate. Some people say it's to get up to sleep, that you can't sleep when you're hibernating. Some people say it's to get up to restore your short-term memory, to repair brain function, to do all sorts of things. But every couple of weeks, they wake up. The top graph shows what happens when you give bats white nose syndrome. They wake up a whole lot more often, and that means they run out of fat, they've got no reserves, and they got to do something to get food, and that usually means they die. The other thing that's killing bats in large numbers are these things. Portrayed as a wonderful way to generate green energy. No big problems. I'm sorry, that's not true. These great big turbines appear to attract bats. They hit the blades, or, believe it or not, the blade is going about 140, 150 kilometers an hour at a tip when it's going around. And that actually generates such pressure differences that you can suck the lungs of a bat right up its throat. Okay? A very, very disgusting way to die. It only affects certain types of bats. That is migratory species, not the ones that hibernate. So you get, in some places, 10 to 15 bats killed by each turbine each day. Okay? Again, these bats reproduce very slowly and doing bad things to their populations. So this is the animal that probably suffers the most. It's a beautiful bat called a hoary bat, weighs about 25 grams, and it's the biggest bat that we have in Canada. They appear to be attracted to turbines. They're only killed during a period of about 6 weeks every fall as they migrate through, and it appears to be that these great big things in the landscape look like huge trees, which is where these bats probably mate. So they think they're going to the bar, and they end up getting killed. Silverhairs and reds are also killed in quite large numbers. All right. Given what we're at, I think I'm actually going to stop there, and I won't talk about the birds because I've spent too long talking about the bats. I'm happy if anyone wants to stay behind later. I don't want to make you stay for longer than an hour, and I want to give you a chance to sort of look at my friend close up. But the other group of animals that I study, I should show one picture, is a group of birds that eats insects at night that look like this. You may have heard of whippoorwills. You may have heard of purrwills. In the old world, they're called nightjars for their night jarring sounds. But basically, they are feathered bats. They do many of the same things. Not nearly as many myths, because people think birds are cool, as opposed to flying furry things. So if anyone would love a good close look or to ask a question,
you're more than welcome to come to the front. I thank you very much for coming, and I hope I've made your Halloween full of things that you might not have otherwise known. Thanks for coming. So, a big brown bat, the biggest, the second biggest bat we have in all of Canada. You'll see that it's got two holes in its tail membrane. We take a little piece of skin so that we can extract DNA and effectively do the same thing they do on CSI, only it's a lot more expensive and it takes a lot longer than it does on CSI. And the people that do it aren't nearly as good looking as the people that are on CSI. Okay? So if anyone wants to have a good close look, you're more than welcome. I guess we can put the lights up so people can see. And if you have any questions, please, don't hesitate to ask. Don't mind at all. So, they look big when you spread them out.
Oh, he's chirpy.
And he's chirpy, making sounds that you can hear, but those are not echolocation calls. That's just, be gentle.
He's so beautiful.
So, if you look closely, their wings have 1, 2, 3, 4 finger bones. The bumps are its knuckles, so these are its fingers. This thing here, its thumb. Only time they ever hang right side up is when females are giving birth, they hang by their thumbs. So ladies, if you've had a child, think of it, hanging by your thumbs, and you give birth to a 35-pound bowling ball. Okay? But it grows up in 6 weeks.
Oh my gosh.
How old is
it? We can't tell. It is a she. My guess, we found it hibernating in a bad place. My guess is it was probably born last summer and it hasn't picked a good place to hibernate. It's lost its fat reserves. So it's now too late to let it go. So we'll feed it a bit and it will hibernate in my fridge at home for the winter. And yes, my wife knows that. So if you guys would like to touch some fur, Now I ask that when you're done, do wash your hands because it's a wild animal, it's not a pet. And when you can actually, if you feel it or see it, you see it shivering and shaking. That's it trying to warm up. Right now its body temperature is probably about 23, 24 degrees, room temperature. So it's in shallow hibernation. So it's shivering to wake up.
Lotion on my hand that I want to touch. Yeah. It's okay?
It won't bother it. No. Compared to ours, their fur is actually quite oily. So very, very fine, but fur just like yours. No difference. You can see its hind feet, 5 toes, just like you have, little nails, but very strong. So they could go home and hang by a single toe with no trouble.
What's that for?
This is its tail.
Oh, the tail.
So, and there's skin between the tail and the hind legs. Not all species have that. Some are, the one in the cave in San Antonio is called a free-tailed bat because it has no skin that touches the tail between the hind legs. But it uses this to help it fly.
Where's the toes?
The toes are at the back end.
Oh, I see. Okay.
There we go. Yeah, quite small, but very, very strong.
Well, how many of them are?
Five, just like you. Yeah, although not an obvious sort of big toe, they're all very, very similar.
Mm-hmm. How sharp are their nails?
Their nails are sort of rounded and hooked, so they wouldn't cut you or anything like that, but they can certainly hang on to things very easily. So the ceiling with all the little sort of little pits and things, it could hang from that ceiling with no trouble. I don't want to let it go because it would also fly up the air vent and not come back. So if anyone would like to touch some fur, please.
Where did you find her? Where was she hibernating?
It was in, they try in all sorts of buildings all over Regina. So we get calls all winter long to come and rescue.
Does she have a name?
No, we don't give them names because the idea is keep them over the winter and then let them go in the spring. So.
And you said this is a male or female?
Female.
Female. Okay.
So you check in the appropriate place right here. And literally, if it was a male, when it's not aroused, the penis would be half a centimeter long. Very, very easy to tell.
Oh,
Unlike rodents, which are very difficult to tell the gender.
So what is China doing now?
She's just trying to get away. Yeah. That's all. So we've only had this animal in captivity for about a week, so it's not used to being handled very much yet.
Mark, are they either vegetarians or meat eater, or do they eat both all the time?
There's no such thing as a vegetarian bat. There's no herbivores.
I thought you said they eat fruit.
Yeah, but, well, okay, yeah. Okay. Here, nothing but insects.
Oh, okay.
So they're all carnivores.
So they either just carnivores or they don't eat both?
No. Occasionally, some of the fruit eaters probably ingest some insects that have laid eggs on the inside of the fruit, but it would be purely by accident. Mm-hmm. Okay. Any other questions?
Do bats hear the most out of all the mammals?
Actually, your dog and your cat do a pretty good job. And whales hear a whole lot, but in the other direction, very, very low frequency sounds, things that we can't hear, that we sense more as vibration as opposed to sounds. But yes, they probably are amongst mammals, probably some of the best. But there are other some mammals that actually echolocate. Shrews, some shrews echolocate, some whales echolocate. So bats aren't the only animal that does it. And if you go to a really, really good Chinese restaurant, you would know this. Have you ever eaten bird's nest soup?
Very expensive,
yes, because you are eating the nest of a bird called a swiftlet, which lives in caves in South Pacific Islands, and they click their tongues to echolocate to find their nest in the cave. And what the nest is little bits of leaves glued together with spit.
Yeah.
So they spit, glue the leaves together, and what you're actually eating is the spit. They pull off the leaves, so you're eating bird spit soup is what you're eating. And it's very expensive. I have had it once, and it was very, very good.
Oh.
But anyway, you have to get over what you're actually eating.
Yeah.
How fast does it kind of fly?
This animal would fly 7 or 8 meters per second. So I don't think of it in kilometers per hour, but it could... In places we've studied it, they fly 8, 10, 12, 15 kilometers one way to a feeding place and then come back at a night. So flying 25 or 30 Ks, no big deal. The free-tailed bats go even further. We know that they'll fly 100 kilometers a night, and the big flying foxes, likewise, don't have any problem with those sorts of distances. They probably fly shorter distances if they can, but if they have to, they'll go that far. So they're not as fast as most birds, but they're much more maneuverable. So this bat could, for those of you who have an office, could fly in your office with no big problem. A little brown bat at 7 grams could fly in your closet at home without ever touching the clothes. So they're very maneuverable. They're not as fast as most birds.
Do they use the same lift that birds do? Or
yep. Physics is the same.
Constantly, or
yep.
Do they glide?
They do much less gliding. In that sense, feathers are much better than skin because you can also adjust. I mean, whenever you're sitting on an aircraft, you notice how the wings are adjusted before you're taken off. Birds can do that much more easily by adjusting their feathers than these guys can. These guys, all they can change basically is the angle of attack. So when they fly slower, they make it a steeper angle, which generates more lift. But it means these things can fly almost at stalling speeds without any great problem. There are none that hover as well as hummingbirds, but the ones that stick their faces in flowers 3, 4, 5 seconds in basically the same place, not too difficult. But I say, what they can do better than birds is turn tightly. So a swallow is very, very fast, dart-like. But ask it to turn, and it needs lots of space to turn. So like the Queen Mary needs a big harbor. This is the little motorboat, just like that. So they can turn on a dime. And they just basically spread that tail, spread those wings, and just basically stall and turn themselves around. Yep?
Are bats related to this bird?
Well, very, very distantly. About as much as you're related to that bird. So I like to say it that animals that are called vertebrates, they all have these things, pardon me, right back here. You feel that thing right back there, your backbone? So all vertebrates have a backbone. So all vertebrates snap if you bend them, okay? So if you bend them really hard, they'll go and break. This has a backbone, just like you do. Fish have a backbone. Lizards have a backbone. Frogs have a backbone. So all that big group, you're related to. But this one is no more closely related to it than you are. It just happens to do many things that are similar. It's out at night. catches insects. This thing can use torpor and hibernate just like these bats do, which we don't think of birds doing. The only thing that's different is the birds can't echolocate. They use those big eyes to find their insects. So they're using vision rather than echolocation. And just like bats, they're found all over the world. Every part of the world except New Zealand, you find those birds. Bats, there's only two species in New Zealand, but they're found in New Zealand.
Mark, you said the mammal, you said all the mammals have fur.
All mammals have fur.
I didn't know the whale has fur.
When the calves are first born, there's a little fur on them. So as adults, they've got a few leftover bristles around their genital openings, but very little. But they still have some, yes. Okay. And then, of course, the famous ones are the two Australia ones, the echidna and the duck-billed platypus, which don't give birth to live offspring. They lay eggs, but they feed those offspring once they hatch milk, so they're perfectly good mammals. So you don't have to give birth to live offspring to be a mammal. Rattlesnakes give birth to live offspring, and they're not mammals.
How can... I just don't know what it's called. And how can the poles with the like thing kill bats?
Those big windmills.
Oh, the wind.
Because when the wind is blowing, that big propeller is not stationary. It's going around very, very, very fast. And if you get close to that and you get hit by it, it's going so fast it actually it kills the bat. But it also generates a pressure difference. So at the front of the propeller, there's lots of air. Behind the propeller, there's very little air, which means it's very low pressure. And areas of high pressure where there's lots of air try to move to places with low pressure. That's why we're having the weather we're having right now, because we have a low pressure system that's over Saskatchewan, and it draws all the moisture in, which falls on us. Okay? So behind the propeller, low pressure. If the bat gets stuck behind the propeller, all of its insides want to come up its mouth to try to get to that low pressure area. So that's how low the pressure is, because the propeller is moving so fast. So it'd be like getting hit by a car, which you know you don't want to ever do, because it would really, really, really hurt for half an instant, and then you...
My mom's brother was hit by a car.
Yeah, I bet you he didn't enjoy it one little bit.
He died.
Yes. Not very nice, right? So you don't want to ever get hit by a car. These guys don't ever want to get hit by one of those wind turbine propellers, and no one talks about it.
Do you go and study them, like the ones out, you know?
I haven't done it here. There are lots of other people doing it. Different places, different levels of fatalities, but we know that at a place in southern Alberta where there's lots, those migratory bats, the numbers that are killed now are starting to drastically decline, which says there's fewer targets. We're causing declines in the populations.
Have they found a way to cure that white nose, or what can you do about that?
Can't do anything. The way to cure the turbine problem is simply to turn them off for 2 hours at dusk for 6 weeks during mid-August to the end of September. That would fix the problem. Yeah, but of course that means you're not making money from the turbine when it's turned off, right?
You think the
advertising's wonderful. You think, oh, propeller in the air, not doing anything. Yes, let's do that to generate energy. Well, it causes a problem, like everything does. There's no simple solutions. I'm not saying the energy companies are horrible. Burning oil is not great. Nuclear is not great. Everything has its issues. But let's have the real information. And the real information is that turbines kill lots and lots of bats.
And birds, right?
Relatively few. It's interesting that the great big ones kill fewer birds than the smaller ones low to the ground. Because most birds are not attracted. They hear the sound because it makes so much sound, and they go in an opposite direction, so they don't go near them. So not that there aren't some birds killed, but lit windows and skyscrapers in big cities kill far more birds than wind turbines do. So white nose.
Why do you hate Halloween?
Why do I hate Halloween? Because everybody thinks bats are horrible animals, especially on Halloween. Look at, see my shirt, right? This is meant to be a Halloween shirt, and you look at the bats on here, and they're not shown very nicely. So on Halloween, we put all sorts of bats on things to make them look scary and spooky and to scare people. And I don't... How can that scare you?
And I... When I was little, I always thought bats were completely black.
Yes, there's some, but most are brown. And so you don't think you're little anymore, do you? No, you're big. I thought. Yeah.
2 years ago.
2 years ago you were little. Yeah, 2 years ago I was little too, you know that?
How heavy the wing is compared to the body?
The wings are very, very light because the bones are small and all the rest is just skin. There's nothing to it but skin.
5%?
Yeah, at most. Yes, very, very small.
So the Air Force should research this one, so make the plane lighter.
Yes. Yeah, no, it does well. The problem is that because you don't have muscles in the wings, or very, very small ones, to adjust the shape of the wing is harder, right? Because you don't have, in aircraft, all those things that allow that wing shape to be changed by moving flaps. They can't do that as well. Mm-hmm. Feathers are the ultimate sort of airfoil for flight. These guys, they're not as good as birds, but they've got lots of other advantages. So did anyone else want to touch some fur before I put them away?
Maybe I mentioned this. What are the little holes?
So we take a skin sample, so and then we can extract DNA from that and genetically type them.
Does it grow back? Or?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Just like you getting a cut on the back of your hand.
Would it affect his flight abilities?
No. Uh-huh. I've actually seen bats of this species, so if you bring out the wing. She's called a big brown bat. They have dull, boring names. I've seen a bat with a hole the size of a toonie right there. And I can't tell the difference when it flies. It doesn't look like it's having trouble. So they seem to have lots of extra wing area.
They seem to be able to compensate for
those
sort of things.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So we don't think this does them any harm.
When I lived in Thailand, there was an area where there was a lot of stagnant water sitting there, and there were just zillions and zillions of mosquitoes there at night.
Yep.
And there was some little flying animal that at night would go back and forth, apparently having a feast, but it was too dark to see what they were. Would that be some kind of bat?
Yeah, probably a small one. Thailand is neat because it has the world's smallest bat, called the bumblebee bat, which would fit on my thumb and weighs 2 grams, which is the weight of a dime. The smallest vertebrates, or warm-blooded vertebrates in the world, are a hummingbird, a shrew, and a bat, all 2 grams. There's none that are any smaller than that. In SQL, they're all the same size. So the bumblebee bat in Thailand is kind of cool. Never seen that. I'd love to someday.
Did they use... Oh, sorry.
No problem. I just have to keep my eye on the time. I've got a meeting at 2:30.
Oh, the high frequencies they use during echolocation, does that provide a resolution advantage because it's so small? Or do they just make small noises because they're small?
They can, well, you heard it squeak. It's perfectly capable of making that. No, the advantage to high frequency sound is that, I take you back to physics, if you remember it.
Yes.
So,
the wavelength
is very, very short, which means it reflects off smaller objects.
Right.
So my low frequency sound, it bounces off the wall. But if there was a ping pong ball held in the air, it would not bounce back off the ping pong ball. It would go around it. So high frequency sounds bounce back off small objects. The downside is that high frequency sounds also attenuate in the atmosphere a whole lot more. So when your mom tried to call you when you were a kid, she didn't use the high pitched squeaky voice. She used the low deep booming voice because that carries further so that then you can say, no, I didn't hear you. Yes, you did. I used the low voice, not the squeaky voice. So downside doesn't carry very far. So this animal probably only detects an insect at maybe 2 meters. Maybe 3 meters.
Wow.
It can detect the wall at 10, 12, 15. But the insect, very, very short range, which is why they've got to be so maneuverable to catch it. And the other disadvantage is that you're flying around screaming your lungs out. If anybody else can hear you, they know, oh, you found a good place to eat. Let me just go right there and horn in on what you've got. So there's all sorts of eavesdropping that goes on.
Is it mainly owls that'll pick up? Is that their main predator?
They really have very few predators. Owls are not anywhere near maneuverable enough to catch them. So sometimes an owl will sit outside a tree roost and use its talons and grab one. Sometimes snakes will do that, but usually in very specialized situations. Most of the time, their biggest threat is they survive very poorly over their first hibernation year. Once they live to be one, just like humans, then unless some accident befalls them or something really bad luck, most of them live to be a ripe old age, as far as we know. And they probably die just like we used to. They wear down their teeth, they can't chew their food properly, and they slowly starve to death. They have to gum their food, and hard insects, that's hard to do. So we've learned to use dentures and all that sort of stuff. They haven't figured it out yet. So their teeth are the same as ours. They have the same number, same kind, just sharper. They get baby teeth just like we do, lose them very, very early on. That's what they grip mother with, and then lose them, and then keep the adult set of teeth for the rest of their life. So got to last a long time, just like ours. And again, Halloween's bad. They don't eat sugar, so they don't get cavities. But what are we going to do to our teeth over the next couple of days?
Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Okay. My pleasure. Okay. Anyway, if any of any other questions, don't hesitate to ask. I do thank you for coming. And sorry I talked too much.
What's the minimum in your life? Well, you have to kill them. The transient cell. How do you use an experiment?
To fly them?
Yeah.
An office.
Oh, okay.
That's all.
Regular office.
Regular office.